I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This show is for college recruiting fans.
What a run! He's got a lane! Wow! Touchdown! What an athlete!
The inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. This is Recruiting with Andrew Nemec, the Oregon Live and Oregonian recruiting expert players, coaches, and fans follow.
Ooh-wee.
Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
Hello and welcome to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. It feels good to be back. And we've hit the reset button in recruiting. The early signing period is over. The late signing period seems to have begun. We're in a little bit of a quiet period right now, but things are about to pick up. We know who the targets are going to be for the Oregon Ducks and Oregon State Beavers. Oregon clearly wants a defensive tackle. Oregon State seems to want offensive linemen. Oregon also may be in the mix for a grad transfer quarterback. We will get to all of that later in the show. We will also talk about, and I thought this would be fun because Oregon State's fixed it. I don't want to pile on Oregon State's recruiting.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't.
You're a hater.
No, I really don't. But I thought they did a phenomenal job this year. I thought there were some signs that they've really progressed on the recruiting trail, and it's been enough time. So I thought we'd do a segment called the Gary Anderson Files. The worst recruiting stories of the Gary Anderson era. I feel like I can finally talk about him.
Dude, you just started this segment saying you didn't want to bash on him. Now you're going to bring up one of the worst times.
He's not there anymore. I don't know. To me, it seems reasonable to say they're a lot better. Here's some of the reasons that we were negative about him in the past, and here's some of the ways they fixed it. These are the kinds of things that were happening, and Coach Smith, frankly, has fixed a ton of these. And that is a huge reason that they have a top 50 class in the country, including the number one junior college quarterback in the nation, Chance Nolan.
Hey, man, and as a Beaver for life, believe you me, I would enjoy that segment immensely.
See, and that's what's funny is I ran this by a bunch of people, and I ran it by some Beaver people and some Duck fans and some family friends, and just said, what would you think if we did like the worst recruiting? And they said, oh, that would be fascinating. And even the Oregon State fans said, you're a jerk. No, you're kind of not. That would be fascinating. So we will talk about that and some of the reasons they finished 12th. Why did they finish 12th? Why are they now 9th? One, they're winning more games. Two, because of some of the stories we'll talk about in the next segment. But first, I want to get to the All-American Bowls, the Under Armour All-American game and the All-American Bowl. And if you are an Oregon fan, I'm not sure it could have gone much better. Obviously, Oregon doesn't get Kelee Ringo, but if you've been paying attention to recruiting, five-star corner Kelee Ringo was very likely to choose Georgia. By the time he committed, there was no expert anywhere that picked Oregon. So for all intent and purpose, that was done. He signed during the early signing period. It was over. It was just a matter of an announcement. It was very clear he was picking Georgia. I think there was a screen grab of the Georgia recruiting class chat, and Kelee Ringo said, hey guys, I've signed, I'm joining. So the cat was out of the bag there. So if you were one of those people that was waiting on Kelee Ringo's announcement, you just kind of missed the boat. Not that Oregon didn't want Kelee Ringo. They would have loved to have him. But that ship sailed last month. We already knew. Dante Manning, a little bit more questionable, but again, everybody in that instance thought he's pretty much a slam dunk to Oregon. The number 3 corner in the entire country, the number 23 player in the country on ESPN, the number 30 player in the country on Rivals. And this is a kid that I think gets overlooked a little bit because so many people are excited about Justin Flo and Noah Sewell, and rightly so, the 2 5-star linebackers. It's very encouraging. I know Oregon fans really excited about it. Dante Manning's the highest rated defensive back commit in program history. Dante Manning's the number 3 corner in the nation. He's just missing 5-star status, and they pulled him out of Missouri, which now is technically SEC country. You pull a big-time talent, like the number three corner in the nation out of SEC country, that's a job well done. And it almost seems like an afterthought. That's how good Oregon has done with recruiting. And if you kind of were wondering why Oregon finished 18th, and everybody went, why is everybody celebrating this recruiting class during the early signing period? Oregon finished 18th and second in the Pac-12. And then Mario Cristobal says, we have the best recruiting class in the Pac-12. This is a championship class. And everybody's going, well, the math doesn't quite work here. Well, Dante Manning told everybody he signed during the early signing period. And Mario Cristobal seemed really happy and also mentioned they weren't done. It seemed very likely that they either landed Kelee Ringo or Dante Manning. It was pretty obvious that the 18th class wasn't going to really end up being the 18th class. And that's why I said all month leading up to the early signing period, be patient. The ranking won't match what Oregon's done because there are some kids who are deciding after the early signing period. So then the early signing period happens and Oregon fans go, why are we celebrating this? It's 18th. And it's like, I spent a month talking about this. There's more to come. It's really good. And so now Oregon is 12th on 24/7 Sports. They're 9th on Rivals for the second time in program history. And now also back-to-back years, they finish with the number one recruiting class in the Pac-12 conference. So Under Armour All-American game went well. Robbie Ashford looks interesting, although he's supposed to be a high, high major league draft pick. I think there's a very good chance he doesn't actually end up playing for Oregon at all, and he goes the major league draft route. We will see on that. Then we get to the Adidas All-American Bowl, and everybody gets their first look at Noah Sewell, and oh my God, Will Darkins. I don't know if I've seen a kid. Now, I've seen the number one, two, and three kid kind of live up to the hype, and you go, that kid's amazing. I don't know if we've seen somebody who we went, you know, he's 270, but he's just an absolute freak at linebacker. And you go, okay, we'll see. And then they go to an All-American Bowl and they look fine. He showed off every tool in his arsenal. He dropped back into coverage at 270 pounds, high-pointed an interception. It was a horrible throw. It was a horrible throw.
But the fact he's that large and he's spying in on it.
But the fact that he high pointed an interception in the middle of the field, 15 yards downfield, plucked it out of the air, and then bulldozed through the East offensive line and a few receivers, those poor, poor kids, and ran for about 20 yards. Then he's the designed ball carrier on a fake punt, runs for 30 yards and bowls over people. And you go, oh, I see what this is. This is a bruising running back / elite thumper of a middle linebacker. And then as a gimmick play, the East played the number one recruit in the nation. And I'm going to botch his last name. I believe it's Brian Breeze. Breesy? It's something along those lines. Anyway, he's normally a defensive end. They moved him to fullback running back position and gave him a goal line carry. And Noah Sewell scrapes along the line, fills the hole, and just destroys the kid at the goal line. There aren't too many 270-pound kids. It's like, get you a guy who can do both. You know, get you a girl who can do both. Get you a linebacker who can do both. Scrape at the line like that. Fill a hole and destroy a guy. Drop back into coverage at 270 pounds. And oh yeah, by the way, he's potentially a bruising linebacker or running back who's going to be your goal line back. And when you need it, he can be that guy that comes in at 3rd-and-2 and gives you a first down. Noah Sewell was named 24/7 Sports Alpha Dog as the best player in the game. And there was no doubt about it.
Well, this begs the question that somebody's already putting in on the text line. And I was thinking myself too, which is, do you think Sewell eventually grows into a defensive end? Because you're talking up the size, you're talking up the speed. And I'm not saying, and I don't know if the texter is saying this either, but like a, you know, 3-point stance defensive end, but somebody like Von Miller, where he can get out into coverage and he's a stand-up rusher.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's possible, but you don't eat your way into being a Von Miller. Von Miller is a freaky lean athlete. You know, I mean, he's muscular, but he's pretty lean. And we talked to Gabriel Sewell Sr. I did a Q&A with him, and he said, listen, our kids eat a ton, and we've got a lot of boys, and they're big boys. They're college football players. If we could afford to feed them proper nutrition and let them eat a lot, we'd be wealthy people. We don't have that kind of money. He's going to go to Oregon, and I guarantee you, and his dad talked about it, the goal is to get him down to probably 245, 250, and at that point, you're not worried because we've seen how he moves at 270. And if you're looking for an example and you go, can Oregon really do that? Look at Penei Sewell. During his recruitment, people said, he's too big. He can't be a tackle. He's going to slide in at guard. Oregon got him on a nutrition plan. He slimmed down a little bit. He gained some muscle mass, moves to left tackle or stays at left tackle, and is the Outland Trophy winner. So does Oregon's nutrition plan fit the Sewell family? Well, we've already seen it work once. So unless Noah is vastly different than his brother, I think we're going to see it again. The other local news, Justin Flo was supposed to be in it. He was up for player of the year. He ends up not making the trip. He doesn't play in the game. The other local news, Will Darkins, is Lake Oswego's own Casey Filkins, who was a running back selected to the game. Really exciting. Oregon hasn't had a ton of successful players in that game. Even Oregon guys who have played in that game haven't done a whole lot when they've been in that game. They've kind of been also-rans. Casey Filkins scored a touchdown in the All-American Bowl. Lake Oswego's own Casey Filkins takes one of the house.
That probably has to be the best performance by any Lake Oswego player in an All-American game. And I think he might be the only one in a very long time that's been playing in an All-American.
I'm trying to remember the only other player I can remember doing much from Oregon, the state of Oregon, that was in an All-American Bowl. I think Tyner did okay. I don't know if he scored. And I thought Keenan Lowe potentially had a long catch in the All-American Bowl. It might have been a touchdown. I can't remember a touchdown from an Oregon player in an All-American Bowl. I can't remember it. And again, we get back to this whole thing of Casey Filkins is sort of underappreciated. He's a three-star prospect. He's going to Stanford. He's kind of quietly been the most dominant player in the state for the last 2 years. And we sort of just kind of ho-hum it. Casey Filkins, what he's done on the football field is as special, not game to game, but career stats, is as special as anything Thomas Tyner did. And I know Thomas Tyner's a five-star, and he's bigger, and he's faster, and I get it. I'm just saying we don't look at Casey Filkins and think we just had a superstar come through our state. And yet Casey Filkins is a superstar and he's going to Stanford, and him and Emmett Smith's son, EJ Smith, are going to be an intriguing 1-2 punch for the Cardinal in years to come. And I'm really excited to see what he's going to do, because I think he's a guy that can line up in the slot. I think he's a guy who can be a running back, very Alvin Kamara-esque type player. And it will be interesting to see what he does at Stanford, but we don't talk about him that way. It's like, oh, it's kind of cute. Casey Filkins is our guy, but he's really dang good at football.
Dude, I watched him in the playoffs this past season, and not only was he playing quarterback, which everybody was very well aware of, but he just had the ability. And I know that, you know, when we had him on the show, he said that I model my game more after Alvin Kamara. Dude, he reminds me of Le'Veon Bell. The ability to just kind of sit and
there
read.
Is some of that. There,
no, there
he
is.
Just
sits
he's really
and
good
reads
at it.
The pocket. He has that sense about him.
You're right. I mean, that's what bothers me about the Christian McCaffrey comp. And not that McCaffrey's not good between the tackles. He obviously is. But Kamara and Le'Veon Bell's another good one. Are guys who are also good receiving backs who just aren't white. And I think everybody, Casey Filkins going to Stanford. Oh, Christian McCaffrey, because he's white. And so is Christian McCaffrey. He's
30 more pounds, Toby Gerhart.
30 more pounds. You know what he reminds me of? He's like a Toby Gerhart, Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, a hybrid.
Hybrid. Yeah, I hate that. I hate when people do that. As a rule, I try to cross-racial my comps when it's a white kid, because I think people just lazily throw out whatever white guy is roughly their size. He said, I'm a lot more like Kamara, and I think you're right. He's a lot more like Bell, too. His patience in the hole and his ability to see the hole and the play develop between the tackles. Maybe he's supposed to go off tackle, but he sees an opening, and he'll just kind of switch gears on you and go the other way. That's different than a lot of other running backs, and you're right. It is a Bell Kamara-esque talent. I really like him, but the story to me, again, when Noah Sewell, and you see these kids and you go, you know, how good are they really? Oregon gets a five-star. Are these guys really going to pan out? Noah Sewell and Justin Flo are considered two of the best linebackers to come out of the country in the last 5 or 6 years. Noah Sewell's testing numbers for his size have never been done before by a linebacker, ever. The type of numbers he puts up at his weight has never been done before. And Justin Flo is supposed to be the best linebacker to come out of California in 20 years. That's how good those two kids are. Noah Sewell is supposed to be, like, air quotes here, the less good one. And he just was named Alpha Dog of the All-American Bowl, picked off a pass, stuffed the number one recruit in the nation at the goal line, and had a 30-yard carry. If you're not excited about Oregon and the future of Oregon with the way they're recruiting right now, you're crazy. Because what they're doing is is for the program historic. Back-to-back number one recruiting class in the Pac-12 for the first time ever. They'd never before done that until Mario Cristobal became the head coach. They've now done it twice. And they've landed Kayvon Thibodeau, Justin Flo, and Noah Sewell, three five-star prospects for their front seven in the last 2 years. Unbelievable.
Well, and let me just say this, that what happened at the end of the Rose Bowl during the trophy ceremony had to be one of the greater cross-promotional and recruiting pitches I've ever seen. And I don't think that it was very obvious. It was subtle in a way, the fact that Mario Cristobal grabbed the trophy by one hand and started pumping his team up. And if you're an 18 or a 19-year-old or a 17-year-old and you're looking at that, dude, you're saying to yourself, oh, that looks like fun. Like, I want to go there. Smoking, they win.
Smoking cigars in the locker room. I mean, yeah. They were having a good time, man. I mean, they really did. They had a good time.
They're having a great time. They're playing on national television. I want to go there.
The Gary Anderson files. The worst Gary Anderson recruiting stories. Next on Tanning the Fan. I played with the idea of this segment for a few years, a couple years. And I wanted to wait until I thought Oregon State did a really nice job on the recruiting trail because I wanted it to be fixed before I talked about it. I wanted Oregon State to be past it, and they are. Top 50 class in the nation. Got the number one JC quarterback in the country, and we'll talk about that later in the segment. But before that, there was Gary Anderson. And I was very, very critical of Gary Anderson and the staff's recruiting. And all those guys that are involved in these particular stories are gone. They've moved on. And enough time has passed, and Coach Smith is corrected enough that I feel like it's okay to talk about. You don't feel like it? It's too soon? Too soon?
Hey, you have editorial control of this show. Well, I can't stop you.
Good. So a few of the worst stories from the Gary Anderson recruiting situation. They were set to host Savon Ahmed, who just declared for the NFL draft from Washington, Connor Weddington, and Daniel Green, who were all coming together on a visit. Their credentials were misplaced. And because those guys showed up on game day, it was hard to get a hold of the coaching staff. So collectively, the kids couldn't get a hold of the coaching staff. Security didn't have their credential, and they could not get in. So for quite some time. So Savon Ahmed, Connor Weddington, and Daniel Green were locked out. And that was those were their three big visitors of the weekend, or three of the four, were locked out of their visit for a long period of time with security arguing they didn't have clearance to get in. Nobody came to find them. Nobody answered the phone. And they were stuck for quite some time until somebody finally checked their phone and did an oh no. Then they got in and Oregon State was really focused on a JC defensive lineman. A JC defensive lineman that I'd spoken to and knew for sure they weren't going to get. And he was being given the royal treatment, and they tried to kind of get involved in some of that. Like, hey, we're here. And it was like, okay, cool. And they kind of got blown off a second time once they finally got in. Not good. None of the three ended up at Oregon State. None of the three were even interested in Oregon State for quite some time. There was an in-state wide receiver. This is story number two. There was some debate over whether he was a wide receiver or tight end. This was the last year of the Gary Anderson era, and the coaching staff was not getting along. The tight ends coach told him he was being recruited at tight end. The wide receiver coach told him he was being recruited at receiver. And the kid preferred wide receiver. And it dramatically changed the way he looked at his recruitment, whether or not he was considered a tight end or a wide receiver. But because those two coaches wouldn't speak to each other, they never got on the same page for months during his recruitment. So he would be hosted. He'd go on a visit. They'd talk to him about being a tight end by the tight ends coach. The receiver coach, pull him aside. Hey, just so you know, we'll make you a receiver. They never did get on the same page for months until Coach Smith got the job. And made a point, and this is where Coach Smith's done a lot of really good stuff. Coach Smith made a point of going to the kids' high school at an appropriate time when it was a time where he was allowed to do that and clarifying the situation. But by then, the damage was done. For months, a kid was recruited and tried openly. I saw the messages. Hey, guys, am I a tight end or a receiver? Can someone give me an answer? You're a receiver. You're a tight end. Okay, well, can you guys get on the same page here? Because I need to know. You're a tight end. You're a receiver. Couldn't get a straight answer.
See, and this to me is one of the most surprising parts of the Gary Anderson era. And I think that what you're telling me right now pretty much sums it up, which is nobody was the adult in the room.
And that's, and that was a big part of it.
Yeah.
There
nobody
a lot
was
of,
there to just go, look, I don't like you. You don't like me, but we got to be on the same page here. Like, we have to agree on this.
So they offered a kid, a Northwest kid, who I knew the program. I didn't know the kid. They offered a kid. This is story number three. And I watched his film and assumed it was a mistake because there was no way the kid was a Pac-12 kid. I got in contact with his high school coach and said, is this a preferred walk-on spot? And he said, is there any way that you can, you know, like not publish this in a story about the kid? And I said, of course not. Yeah, 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 fine. And he said, we thought he was a preferred walk-on for the Big Sky. We were hoping he'd get like Western Oregon or Eastern Oregon or Southern Oregon, and then maybe he could use that to walk on at Portland State. We're not sure what's going on. And so I ended up finding out the story was, in his highlight video, he had a run against a team that people assumed was good. His first play was like a 90-yard run against a team people thought was going to be really good at high school football that year. So it seemed like, wow, the kid just had a 90-yard run against elite program X in the Northwest. So Oregon State went and visited the kid and said, could you stand in a doorway? They took a cell phone picture of him with his shirt off standing in a doorway. And based on that run and the picture of how broad his shoulders were in the door frame, offered him a scholarship.
Dude, no.
Yes. Confirmed every which way. And after it happened, confirmed by Oregon State coaching staff.
Dude, why? That's like Moneyball stuff. You remember the scene in Moneyball in the beginning kid, where they're like, got a great face, got a great girlfriend kind of thing?
The kid did not pan out in any way, shape, or form at Oregon State.
Yeah, I would imagine.
These are the kinds of things when I'm like, they finished 12th and some of these things are really bad, but you can't, I don't want to dog the kid out, but enough time has passed and no one's going to know who these kids are. I can move on. Another time, this is story number four. It might be our last story here because we're running up against it a little bit in the break. A kid announced his commitment to Oregon State. Announced his commitment. They got a three-star defensive back from Florida. The problem, it seemed, after the kid deleted it within 10 minutes, was that he was being recruited by a position coach and a regional coach, which is how a lot of teams do it. Each coaching staff might take their own position and then also take a region. For example, because I know this is the way it worked for a while, TJ Woods at Oregon State was an O-line guy who also had a lot of Oregon kids. So potentially there would be a safety in the state of Oregon. I'm just making up stuff. I'm just saying, you know, this is an example. So TJ Woods could have the kid because he was a safety, but then the defensive backs coach would also have that kid. So multiple coaches are recruiting. The two guys couldn't decide whether or not either of them had really offered and blamed the other one that you must have offered because I never offered. Well, you must have offered because I never offered. The high school coach felt that both coaches had made clear that the kid had an offer. And both coaches just pointed the finger at each other and said, this is miscommunication on your part. This kid was maybe supposed to be a preferred walk-on. It was way too early for when preferred walk-ons happen. Preferred walk-on offers are happening now. This was like in the summer. It was way before a preferred walk-on offer would happen. So clearly he was told he had some sort of offer. And it was such a good offer for him because he wasn't that level a kid. He ended up at a small, small school in Florida that he jumped on it. It's like, I got an offer from a Pac-12 school? Committing. The high school coach was furious about the situation and had real players that were good that Oregon State would have loved to have. But it caused so much problem that it hurt Oregon State's influence with that school, and it kind of botched their ability to recruit at that school.
I'm betting they got that connection from Evanston Bernard, Sabby Piscatelli, you know what I mean? It was kind of Florida things. Like, that's the stuff you don't screw up. We had another guy there. Oh, gosh. I'm blanking on his name. He was basically from Oklahoma, and he was a pure athlete. Mm-hmm. He was nobody that you could really rely on. But, like, when you get those guys, you create the pipeline. And it's just like, it seems like Gary Anderson came in there and thought that what he was doing at Wisconsin would transfer to Oregon State, which, not to say that recruiting practices and organization at Wisconsin is lax. It's just that I bet they've been doing it a certain way for so long that it's just on autopilot.
I've never, in all the time I've done it, and all the time I've covered recruiting, I've never had that story like the Northwest kid.
That's absurd.
Who they watched one play of and then had him stand shirtless in a doorway. And by the way, the kid was not even, he ended up his senior year, he was not all league in his league on either side of the ball. He wasn't a star player on his team. He was an average player at a below 500 team in the Northwest. It was bad. I mean, it was the weirdest offer I've ever seen. And even since then, I've had people associated with that coaching staff say, that's the weirdest offer we've ever seen. Once he got here, not good.
So what do you attribute then? Because this is some of the, I mean, these aren't disaster stories. They're stories of.
There's a couple I'm, yeah.
You're holding back.
We're holding back a little bit.
But
this
is severe disorganization. What is it about Mario Cristobal and what he does or any other successful program in the Pac-12 or anywhere in the country that you know of that is the antithesis of that? Where I mean, it's just like, no, we do not do it that way.
I mean, I think what they're doing now is pretty good. I think they do a good job now. Blanket recruit, you communicate, and everybody's on the same page. We don't see we don't see miscommunication on offer from an Oregon State kid anymore. That doesn't happen anymore. They know who they like. They go after them, and you can say they wait too long to offer kids. They have a system in place. If you have a system in place that is your identity, that's progress. From what Gary was doing, I mean, Coach Smith right away knew about that kid, tight end, wide receiver, and was like, this is a nightmare. We have to fix this. And fixed it within, like, the first few days he'd been there. I mean, he made an effort. You look at a situation of, like, where I think they did advanced recruiting now, they hosted Jack Sears, the USC transfer, on a visit. He was their guy. That was the guy they wanted, right? Then they start watching updated junior college film, and I don't know this. I'm putting the pieces together here. It seemed as if they pivoted before, especially given that Jack Sears ended up at San Diego State, that they liked Chance Nolan better. And as a staff went, yeah, we hosted a visit, but let's just scrap, you know, okay, we used an official visit on a kid we didn't take. That happens all the time. Let's pivot and go after Nolan. We like him better, and he's got 3 years to play three. Under the old regime, I know for a fact they had kids that they, you know, Gary fell in love with. This is my guy. And they would recruit and recruit and recruit. And clearly based on the senior film, the kid regressed or somebody else stepped up that was better. And it's like, doesn't matter. This is our guy. And it's like, he's not, nobody wants him at this level. Don't stick with that guy because you picked in a camp in June or July that was your guy. And then in pads, he looks like crap as a senior. Don't stick with that guy. Pivot. And this staff with Coach Smith, they've done a remarkable job. And Chance Nolan is the shining example of how much progress they've made. They could have just stuck with Jack Sears and maybe got him and maybe not. But they kept doing the homework. They didn't stick with one guy. Let's watch all the JC film we can possibly watch, pick out the best JC guy we can find, and pursue the hell out of him. And they did, and they found that it was Chance Nolan, who at the time was not rated at all by the rankings, but then when everybody watched his senior film, he's now a four-star recruit on Rivals and the number one junior college quarterback in the country. That's advanced recruiting. That's the progress that Oregon State has shown, where this crap that happened, these four stories that are funny and they're fun to listen to, and it's like, well, whatever. Those are things that will not happen under Coach Smith because he's got it figured out. They still have to make progress. They still have to recruit top 50, top 60 kids in the or top 500, top 600 kids in the country, but they've made tremendous progress.
I mean, they got to win games. They got to win games.
If they win games, they already have, and they've been ranked back-to-back years as having top 25 facilities in the country. I don't think people realize that because everybody pays attention to Oregon, and good for Oregon. They've got great facilities. Oregon State has top 25 facilities in the country. Coach Smith has an interesting offensive game plan. Hamilcar Rashid is not going to end up being a first-round pick. But their scheme puts athletic linebackers and edge rushers in a position to put up big numbers. There's a lot to like about going to Oregon State. They're doing it right. And I'm really encouraged by what I've seen. Who else are they targeting? Who else is Oregon targeting for the late signing period? We'll talk about that next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. For the most part, this recruiting cycle's over. The way we look at it, 80 to 85% of the Power 5 conference guys are signed. And unless you're a guy like Zach Evans, the number two or the number one running back in the country, and you sign with Georgia and then say, I want my release, I changed my mind, which is currently happening for Georgia.
Kids change their minds.
For the most part, it's a done deal. Oregon's got three spots left. Oregon State's got two spots left, roughly. Now, there's always wiggle room if guys leave or declare for the draft or, you know, transfer or, you know, we got to find out what's going on with Jalen Redd. And there's all sorts of things that could happen, but roughly three and roughly two. We'll start with Oregon State. Oregon State clearly is targeting an offensive lineman. 24/7 Sports was first to report it. I confirmed with the kid. Tyler Morano, a two-star offensive lineman, is planning to visit in January. As is Kyle Juergens. Kyle Juergens is a three-star offensive lineman. Kyle Juergens was committed to USC. And Kyle Juergens, it seems very clear. He gave an interview with the Los Angeles Times talking about how excited he was to be part of USC and Clay Helton. The next day, he decommitted. It seems USC has moved on. That being said, Kyle Juergens has several Pac-12 offers and is really an interesting prospect, and I think would be a nice get for Oregon State. They need a guy that can potentially play tackle. I like Corbin Sorensen from Portland State. He's got 1 year left. One, he's definitely not the long-term answer at tackle because he's got 1 year left. Two, I'm not buying that he can play tackle at the Pac-12 level. I don't think it's possible. At Portland State this year, he played every game except the last game of the year, I guess, because he announced that he was going to transfer and then he didn't make the trip. He wasn't an all-conference guy. And the Big Sky has a first team, second team, third team. So he wasn't one of the top six tackles in the Big Sky. Just have a hard time believing you can go to the Pac-12 and be a starting tackle. I think he'll slide inside and provide some guard depth. The other piece, and I think this is where things get really interesting, and this is where Oregon State, frankly, has done a very good job under Coach Smith. I think, I don't know, but it seems to me that they are likely to go after a graduate transfer. It looks like they want offensive linemen. I'm not seeing them hosting a bunch of safeties or a bunch of tight ends or quarterbacks or running backs at the high school level. And if you've got a spot to fill, like they do at offensive line, where they clearly want an offensive lineman, you start hearing that offensive linemen are going to be visiting this month. It's the only position we're hearing, and I don't think they're taking two more. So I think they're keeping a spot available to go get the best graduate transfer possible. Is that a smart idea? Well, last year they kept a spot available, and Charles Moore, the number six defensive end in the entire country, who originally signed with Auburn, started looking around at who had a spot left, and Oregon State was one of those spots. They swooped in and got him. Charles Moore would be one of the top four high school signees they've ever gotten. And essentially, they did get him out of high school because he was only at Auburn for a week or two, and he comes in as a true freshman who now burns his redshirt year. So he'll be a redshirt freshman next season. That works. If you can go ahead and get a top 60 kid in the country out of the graduate transfers or the transfer market, go ahead and do it. And they've proven they're good at it. They hosted Jack Sears, the USC transfer. They hosted Theo Howard, one of the most productive receivers in the Pac-12 the last couple years. They ended up not getting those guys. But like I said, I think who they got instead, especially at quarterback with Chance Nolan's better. 3 years to play three, the number one junior college quarterback in the country. And I think he wins the starting job next year. It's my prediction. We'll see. So I think they're going to keep a spot available and get an impact transfer. And I think that's smart. We'll see. I've been wrong before. I could be wrong again. And then offensive line. And you got to hope you get Kyle Juergens. Tyler Morano is a little bit of a flyer. I think if you get a guy that's in that two-star range that has the Big Sky level offers or the group of five offers, that kind of shows maybe you're having to go a little too far down your board, which we've talked about already with offensive line. Oregon State needs to get offensive linemen who are proven Pac-12 talent, or at least guys who the rest of the Pac-12 covets. You can't consistently battle Nevada, San Jose State, and UNLV for your O-lineman. That's not a recipe for winning. Kyle Juergens has a bunch of Pac-12 offers. That's the guy you want to get. Oregon. Oregon's got about three spots left, and it's going to be interesting. And just like Oregon State, the writing's on the wall with one position. Oregon State hosting a lot of offensive linemen. Oregon planning to host a number of defensive tackles, and that starts with Jason Jones, the Alabama four-star commit. They're looking to flip him. He'll visit in late January, and I think they've got a decent shot to flip him. Alabama prefers him along the offensive line. He says he prefers to play defense. Guess what? The Ducks want him to play defense. Baylor also involved, also set to host him, per 24/7 Sports. I think Oregon's got a decent shot to flip him. The other news coming out today, Oregon has offered uncommitted All-American Bowl selection McKinley Jackson. McKinley Jackson has offers from, big breath, Alabama, Auburn, Clemson, Florida, Florida State, Georgia, LSU, Oregon, Tennessee, USC, and many
Stop
others.
Drilling, you hit oil. You had me in Alabama. He must be incredible.
He is moving up boards. He's one of those kids that, and we'll talk about this in more detail next week, he's one of those kids who didn't sign. He's the top uncommitted defensive tackle in the country. And what's happening is as people go through their boards and say, okay, who's the best player in the country left? Let's just go after him. You know, Alabama, Clemson, Oregon, Georgia. Hey, we can go after just whoever the best dude in the country is because we're Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, Oregon. And he's clearly one of those guys. Had a monster sack in the All-American Bowl. Unbelievably quick feet for his size. He's 327 pounds, 6'4". Again, an All-American Bowl selection at defensive tackle. If Oregon can pull off either of those, it's an impressive feat. Alabama may prefer Jalen Jones at offensive line, but Alabama wants that kid. If you flip an Alabama commit in the late signing period, or you get the number one defensive tackle in the nation that's not committed, and oh, by the way, he's got offers from Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, LSU, at USC, and everybody else, that's a heck of a recruiting job. That's the type of recruiting job you don't traditionally see from Oregon. If they can pull off one of those 320, 330-pound defensive tackles, pull them out of the heart of SEC country when the likes of when one's committed to Alabama and the other one has offers from Alabama and Clemson and the rest, you're doing a heck of a job. That's an A-plus late signing period. They also could potentially add Jamie Newman, and that's going to be really interesting long-term because I think what that speaks to is if you get Jamie Newman is you don't necessarily feel Tyler Shuck is ready yet. But if you think Tyler Shuck is a potential star, I think you don't even host Jamie Newman. Not because you're not interested, but because you don't need him. Jamie Newman was good at Wake Forest. He was. There's no doubt. The stats don't necessarily bear out how good he was. PFF, Pro Football Focus, rated him the number three returning quarterback in the country behind Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence. Number three. Trevor Lawrence consensus number one pick in the draft next year already, and Justin Fields is Justin freaking Fields.
Dude, no love for Sam Ellinger? He just announced he's going to come back.
Sam Ellinger was in the top six or seven. He might have been. He might have been four. He might have been four. I don't.
Still, that says a lot.
Newman's ahead of Ellinger.
Yeah.
I mean that tells you how good potentially he is. If Oregon elects to not host Newman, because Newman is interested, and we've seen reports that Oregon is the favorite. If Oregon pivots from that and takes Shuck, that means they're really excited about Shuck being a Duck. See what I did there?
You're a wordsmith.
I know. A genius. Oh, boy. But Tyler Shuck, I mean, if you've got a really good quarterback in place, you don't necessarily need Newman. So that'll be interesting. I think potentially they could go there. And then the other spots are obvious, right? Every Oregon fan knows tight end spot's a little questionable. The wide receiver spot, maybe. If you could get a big-time running back, maybe you go ahead and do that, and potentially you take a DB, although they seem pretty set at DB, and then defensive tackle. That's where it looks like Oregon potentially could take spots. Oh, and you'd really like a really good lineman with four of your top five or five of your top six linemen leaving. And yeah, Penei Sewell's coming back. It takes several linemen to be really good. And even though you get the best returner in the country coming back, replacing as good a lineman as Oregon had, they would like to potentially add a graduate transfer along the line that can play right away, that could be a big-time talent. That is what's on tap for the late signing period. Not a lot of names. But honestly, for people kind of saying 2020's a wrap, this is where we're at, there are still a lot of exciting pieces on the board. And I think people discount truly how good some of the pieces on the board are. So we will be covering that this entire month. But with our last segment, we wrap up the show next on 1080 The Fan. So we are definitely next week going to be keeping you informed on what's going on with the late signing period, the visitors, who's getting new late offers, that kind of thing. But one of the other things I want to talk about, and we're going to have a guest next week, Alex Lenincole, who's pretty smart about this whole thing, the early signing period versus late signing period. And you look at Lake Oswego's Tiger Shanks. Tiger Shanks is this example. There are kids who are three-star guys whose senior film is better than what they've produced for the past 2-3 years. And Tiger Shanks was a guy who was playing at 360, 370. He got down to about 310, 315, and he looked like a different player this year. And so his stock was rising late. And rather than, he's not some big-time five-star recruit where the offers are always going to be there. We've talked about that as the board reshuffles, teams reshuffle their priorities and try to identify talent. There are kids, and they're mostly three-star guys, who don't sign during the early signing period, and then they become one of the top 5 or 6 players in the nation left for their position, and they become hot commodities. We saw this last year with DJ James. DJ James was a three-star recruit. He was a defensive back recruit. During his in-home visits for the late signing period, he had a program from every Power 5 conference school recruiting him. Not necessarily because he fit every scheme or because he should have been a national recruit, but he was the best kid available in the country, and so every major Power 5 program that needed a DB went, let's go after this guy. Let's give this guy a shot. Alabama tried to get him from Oregon right at the last minute. That can happen with three-star guys because your board reshuffles, a guy declares for the draft late, a guy announces that he's going to transfer late, and you go, we need depth or we need talent. We saw it last year with DJ James. We're starting to see it this year with a local kid, Tiger Shanks from Lake Oswego, an offensive lineman. What went into his decision, and how big is that gamble? Is it possible that if you don't sign during the early signing period and you're a three-star kid, that when other programs shuffle their boards and when the programs that have offered you shuffled their boards, they realize they don't need you? Can that happen? How does it happen? How do you get smart, sage advice about whether to be a kid who could be, everybody thinks they're great. How can you make a smart, informed decision about, I'm going to be one of those risers between the early and late signing period? Tiger Shanks has been that guy. Picked up an offer from UNLV. He's hearing from the Mountain West. He's hearing from the Pac-12. This is a kid that before was only getting low Mountain West offers. And again, the film speaks to potentially a Pac-12 or a Power 5 interior lineman, a left guard or right guard who could end up being really good. What went into that decision? How do you make that decision? We'll talk to Alex Lenincole about it. He's close with Tiger, but also he's been involved in the recruitments of and development of offensive linemen in the state of Oregon, like Dawson Jaramillo, Jackson Kirkland up at Washington, Alex Forsyth at Oregon, Cody Shear, who's at Arizona State. He's been a big part of a lot of these guys' development. So we'll talk to him about offensive line development and also that early to late signing period evaluation. I find it fascinating, because I've seen guys go the wrong way where they go, I'm going to hold out. I'm going to get a bunch of offers. And schools go, all right, we'll just offer one of the 15 dudes that fits right at your three-star level and move on. You have to really know your worth and know your value and how the board's going to shuffle to make that gamble. And it's worked out so far for Tiger Shanks.
Also, I played with Alex Lenincole.
Did you?
Yeah.
He's a great dude.
He's an awesome dude, a dude that will destroy you in his coupon game.
Oh, really?
Seriously.
We're going to talk about this then.
Yes. Alex Lenincole is one of the most master couponers I've ever met in my life.
Is this a real thing? Or you
yes, no. Out? This isn't a genuine...
Sometimes this feels like a Will Darkins thing where you're going to take me down a rabbit hole and I'm going to ask him on the air and he's going to be like, I have no idea what you're talking
about. No. In fact, when, you know, at certain schools, they'll have like a video before every single game. And I don't know, maybe they didn't do this for all the schools, but like they would have they'd feature a senior. And they would show like a short video of like what made them outside of the football field. They did this for that senior class. And Alex's was about him like tracking down coupons.
He's like one of those have you seen that show? I think it's on like TLC, like Couponers, yes. Like Master
Extreme Couponers.
Oh, is that what it is?
He is one of them. I don't know if he's as extreme as those people, but he is very, very good at it.
We'll have to talk to him about this.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Lenincole is one of my favorite people. There aren't too many people in the state of Oregon that don't have some sort of an agenda with the recruiting, whether it's they want to promote their 7-on-7 team or they want to promote their line stuff. You know, Lennon Cole's whole thing, and he does camps for like elementary school kids for free. And his whole thing is, I want to make line play cool so those kids feel good about what they're producing on the field as well. And oh yeah, by the way, he's so good with his technique stuff that he's helped produce Dawson Jaramillo, Jackson Kirkland, Cody Shear. All of the big linemen that have come out of Oregon in the last 5 years have all worked with Lennon Cole.
Well, and he'll have some great stories for you of Coach Kavanaugh at Oregon State.
Oh, we've talked. I just don't know how much he's going to say on the air.
That man said some pretty horrible things. I played fullback and, you know,
it's pretty horrible.
I would split my time between going to running back meetings and going to lineman meetings because as a fullback and then sometimes playing H-back, I had to know some of the protections.
Okay.
And yeah, just some of the ways he would dress down dudes, Coach Kavanaugh, was, it bordered on mean, but was always really funny.
The worst I ever heard, I was a ball boy for the Oregon City teams that were so good in the early, like 93, 94, 95 range when they were really good. They were competing for state titles. And I was a ball boy and Greg Lord was the defensive coordinator at Oregon City. I believe he was banned from coaching at one school. Maybe not. That could be wrong. But I think he was definitely told to tone it down. The cuss words, and I know I was a kid, I still haven't heard any coach at any level cuss and say some of the things that he said to his players consistently. He once, out of anger, because they were playing bad, took a garbage can and dumped it out on the ground, a locker room garbage can. People spit in it and hawk loogies in it, and then told the ball boys to pick it up. So I had to pick up Oregon City's nasty garbage, and he's like, pick that up. Bad. That's bad. Anyway, we'll have a lot more. Thank you for listening to Recruiting with Andrew Nimick on 1080 The Fan. We'll be Mondays for a while now. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for joining us for Recruiting with Andrew Nimick, the show for college recruiting fans with the inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. Read Andrew's latest recruiting news in the Oregonian and Oregon Live, and listen for Andrew's updates throughout the week here on Portland's sports leader, 1080 The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.